This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on the line with Dean Beck. Last Friday, the AFL announced it will begin the process of change, and over the weekend, the organisation took the first steps in being the change, screening the No to Homophobia adverts at two preliminary final matches. The battle to get AFL to acknowledge the existence of homophobia within its code has been fought by many over the last 2 years. People like Dr. Carolyn Simons, Associate Professor Lynn Hillier, Peter Gourlay, Robert Mitchell, Doug Pollard, Human Rights Commissioner Karen Tui and her predecessor Dr. Helen Zoki, Ben Hartung, Chris Tanti from Headspace, Matt Finnis and Ben Hart, Dr. Pippa Grange, Jill Stark, Seamus Bradley, Nathan Burke, Russell Robinson and many, many more. But it is the tens of thousands of GLBTI individuals and the people that you and I will never know that have experienced homophobia and have never felt safe to be a part of sport that I would like to dedicate the following tribute to. The developments over the last week are just the very beginning of what will continue to be a long and arduous journey. But finally, we have started. Oh, there's one other person I'd like to dedicate this to. One man who single-handedly advanced the fight against homophobia in sport more than any other person. Jason Ackermanis, this is for you.
What workplace would you be able to see 20 men nude all the time if you wanted to? And all of a sudden, you know, when you're slapping blokes on the bum and just having a bit of fun, what would that do to a man in there when you actually work out, oh, wait a second.
Western Bulldogs player Jason Ackermanis argued in a newspaper column that gay players should stay in the closet, partly because they could cause discomfort in the locker room if their sexual preferences were known.
The Melbourne Chargers are Melbourne's first gay rugby union team. Club president and player Ben Lankin says the AFL has a lot of catching up to do in tackling homophobia in sport.
The community, and particularly the gay community, would be looking to the AFL to come out and say they're doing all they can to make football environments an easier place for people to come out and to express themselves the way that they should be able to.
I would like a gay AFL elite footballer, a champion, if there is one, and I know there is, to come out publicly, because I think that would do more to attack homophobia than anything. It's happened in rugby league. I'd like to see it happen in AFL.
We need a circuit breaker, and we're not going to get it from mealy-mouthed, half-assed, you know, sort of programs coming out of the AFL. And they are half-assed. Make no mistake about it.
It's midday, good afternoon. I'm Matt Thompson with Joy News. Joy 94.9 is teaming up with the AFL in a special two-hour live broadcast today, which aims at addressing the issue of respectful relationships in sport. The broadcast,
Joy,
which will be hosted.
Joy at the G.
A discussion on the initiatives for developing and maintaining respectful relationships in sport.
Sponsored by the AFL.
Joy 94.9, live from the MCG.
From the home of sport here in Australia, this is Joy 94.9.
Dr. Carolyn Simons from Victoria University joins us now. She's a senior lecturer in the School of Sport.
Professional sport's got some way to go in Australia.
So who should lead the way in this?
The AFL could take a bigger splash than what they're doing. Whenever you're looking at LGBT inclusion, you have to be explicit, you have to name it, and you have to be proactive about challenging homophobia.
You're suggesting that just saying respect diversity is not enough?
That's right. I think you need a tailored, targeted program that looks at homophobia.
And only then can you really make the difference.
That's right.
Unless they actually specifically mention gays and lesbians, unless they specifically address programs towards gays and lesbians, as they have done towards on the issue of race, as they have done towards women in the game, they will not be addressing the problem.
A groundbreaking advertising campaign to tackle homophobia is set to hit our television screens.
In the changing room.
You'd be loving this, mate, wouldn't you?
In the workplace.
Hey, princess, where's your tiara today?
And at school.
Get that thing off your neck. We don't all need to hear about it.
A series of advertisements show everyday scenes that for gay, lesbian, bisexual or transgender people can be a constant struggle.
So who is it this week, a guy or a girl? Haven't you made your mind up?
Anna Brown joins us. She is the spokesperson for the No to Homophobia campaign. Welcome.
Thank you.
If the AFL decided to play these advertisements on the big screen at the MCG and give you $200,000 for the rights to do so, would you say no to it?
Of course not. Yeah.
This morning, the AFL, together with the state government, are launching a new campaign about homophobia in the community, but also in the AFL. Not everybody, though, is happy. Rob Mitchell is a member of the State Department of Sports Governance and Inclusion Project. Morning to you, Rob.
Good morning, John.
Pretty impressive. Hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on a public campaign. What is there to say that's wrong about this?
Well, you're completely incorrect. There's actually not hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on this campaign at all. The reality is they're doing sweet FA. Andrew Demetriou and the rest of his team, Adrian Anderson and Sue Clark, who has carriage of the Respect and Responsibility Project, who should resign, because they're not doing anything around this.
So you're accusing them of lip service and tokenism, effectively.
Let's cut
to the chase.
Well, absolutely. It's not even tokenism. I mean, if you speak to the AFL Players Association today, you'll find out that they've not been involved in this at all. It's totally ridiculous.
The fact that they're not game, I suppose, to come out and declare their sexuality shows that there's a real problem in the AFL.
A brave suburban footballer is putting pressure on the AFL to stand up and support openly gay players. Jason Ball wants the No to Homophobia.
A Yarra Glen footballer has launched a campaign against homophobia in the game. After coming out himself...
A young gay Jason footballer Ball is making a stand against homophobia in the AFL. 24-year-old Jason Ball is calling for a national pride round similar to the Indigenous...
An openly gay footballer is calling on the AFL to address homophobia. Victorian country footballer Jason Ball says it's time for the big league to promote a message of acceptance. He's launched a campaign calling on the AFL to screen an anti-homophobia advertisement.
The Victorian country footballer's push to fight homophobia in his sport has led to the AFL agreeing to air an awareness ad during the finals. Jason Ball's online petition against gay discrimination in the game attracted more than 25,000 signatures.
In a football first, the AFL will air anti-homophobia advertising on the big screen before the preliminary finals. It's a victory for a trailblazing gay footballer who started an online campaign.
His story struck a chord with thousands, and now the AFL has taken notice.
2 weeks ago, Jason Ball called on the AFL to embrace homosexuality. As the first openly gay footballer, he knows statistically he can't be alone, even in the AFL.
Do something about it.
This is a good first step to make sure that we can, over time, shift attitudes. And if we can shift attitudes, not just within our industry, but across the community, that would be a positive.
It is 22 minutes before 8 on 3AW. The AFL will broadcast No to Homophobia advertisements on the big screen at tonight's Sydney Collingwood preliminary final as part of a major push to stamp out discrimination. We welcome Jason Ball, player with the Yarra Glen Football League. Jason is gay. Good morning to you, Jason.
Good morning.
Is this a result of your campaign?
It probably helped. I think, 26,000 signatures on the petition at change.org probably was a good indication to the AFL that the community do want to see this and that they're ready for change.
Gay rights campaigners have welcomed the decision but say there's still work to be done.
This is the beginning with the AFL.
While the petition's been a runaway success, what's really important to this young footballer is the public support he's received. He hopes the stand he's taken will serve as a positive example for other young players.
If I had have known of stories like this, if I had have known of that it could be different, it could be positive, that would have made a world of difference to me.
Andrew Demetriou wouldn't be drawn on how the league plans to tackle the issue further, denying the ads are an empty gesture.
We're not in the business of tokenism, we're not in the business of doing things for spin, and we're certainly not in the business of doing anything for PR purposes.
We will continue to apply pressure to the AFL to create change in this space. That is a commitment that I make to our listeners because they can be pivotal in creating change against homophobia. And coming up next, we'll be speaking to none other than Jason Ball, the man who fronted the campaign to get the AFL to be the change, and the guy who orchestrated it, Nick Allardyce from change.org, will join us. Broadcasting across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming live around the world at joy.org.au. You're on the line with Dean Beck. Now, you will all know that over the last few weeks there has been an amazing campaign to stamp out homophobia in AFL. There's been some developments in that, and I'm very pleased to welcome to the studios of Joy 94.9 the man who faced the campaign, Jason Ball. Welcome.
Thanks for having me back on the show, Dean.
And the man who orchestrated the campaign.
I don't think that's right, Dean. Just been helping Jason along the way. Good to be here, though.
Now, Nick, you are one of the founding directors of change.org. Tell us about the organisation and how you pick things to really target.
Yeah, so change.org is a website that anyone can use to run a campaign on an issue that they care about. So kind of like what people use YouTube for videos, we are for online campaigns. And when a campaign is kind of particularly popular, when it resonates particularly well with our user base, when there's a particularly significant chance of success or chance of impact, then we can parachute in extra support to help someone run that campaign and try and make it as effective as possible. And that can take the form of strategy advice or media support or any number of things. And that's the role that we've been supporting Jason with.
Yeah, I definitely had all of those things.
Jason, taking on board an organisation, an institution like the AFL with its hundreds of years of history and its thousands and thousands of members, for one single person to take it head on and say, listen, guys, you're not doing a good enough job, pull your finger out, is no mean feat. Were you at all hesitant, nervous, petrified about taking on board this monolith?
Well, I mean, there was definitely some hesitation at start, but really for me it was like ripping off a band-aid. I sort of dived straight into it. I didn't think about it too much or dwell on it too much, so I didn't get very nervous. But look, I mean, you know, might seem like it's one guy, but, you know, I had 20,000 signatures on that petition, so
over
I think
27,000, let's be perfectly honest.
Yep.
And, yeah, look, that must have really buoyed your spirits, surely.
Yeah, I definitely never felt alone in the campaign at any stage. You know, my inbox and Facebook and Twitter were just full of people who were really supportive. Strangers, family, friends, the message even reached overseas. You know, we had long lost family friends get in touch with my parents to say, you must be very proud of your son, which is freaky, but yeah.
Now, last week you played in the grand final with the Yarra Glen River Pigs. I believe you sadly lost the grand, not you personally, but the team lost the grand final. Tell me what the environment was like with your teammates, because by that stage they were well and truly aware of what was going on with you.
Absolutely. I think it was a week before the Sunday when the article came out in The Age that we had Channel 7, Channel 9 and Channel 10 all rock up to football training. So the guys, they absolutely knew what was going on. I think they were pretty keen to get on camera or get the phone numbers from the good-looking female reporters that rocked up. They wanted me to sort of act as their wingman, I think. But look, the environment around the club and on the ground as well, I remember running out onto the field and, you know, there's a lot of supporters there at a grand final, a lot of abuse getting hurled over the fence. I really, you know, made sure I shut that out and focused on the game. But, you know, I did have a teammate take me aside and say, Bawley, you know, whatever they say, we've got your back.
What was the feeling like on the ground? Because your opponents by that stage would also have been fully aware of what was going on too. What happened in that space?
Well, I mean, it's a grand final, so it's a pretty electric atmosphere. everything's 100% more intense in the game.
Including the sledging, I would have thought.
Well, I didn't receive anything like that. So that was really positive. I didn't know what to expect. I thought maybe I would. But it didn't really come into the game. So, you know, no complaints in that area.
And after the game, your teammates still fully supportive? They're on board with this with you?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was sad to have a loss. I was pretty happy with my game. I'm really proud of the boys who had a great season, but it's not easy to lose a grand final. It's pretty heartbreaking, and there were some photographers there who got some pictures of me after the game, and I don't really want to look at those photos. But look, at the, you know, after-match function, I had guys from the club who I would never have expected would raise this issue, wanted to pull me aside and say that they thought that the campaign was great and that they were really proud to play on a team with me. And, you know, that meant a lot to me, especially coming from areas where I didn't expect it.
Nick Allardyce, tell us what you look for in an ambassador for a particular campaign. I mean, you couldn't get anyone much better than this man, surely.
I think that's absolutely right. Like, a lot of the campaigns that we see become successful on the site often have a really strong personal story behind them, which really takes an issue out of like what might be perceived as an kind of like an ideological us versus them situation. And then there's a personal story that just cuts through all of that, and people actually see the kind of the people behind the issues that people often campaign on. And I think when there is that direct human connection, when there is that powerful personal story like Jason's, where people can say, I can see what you went through, I can see that this is something that's being driven by the personal experiences that you had, then that resonates, I guess, and cuts through in a way that so many kind of issue campaigns just don't. And so I think that's something that's really important and really signals to us that a campaign could have some real legs.
How important is it in a campaign like this to have a dickhead like Jason Ackermanis?
Look, honestly, it didn't do us. It didn't hurt the fact that you know, when he tweeted on the Sunday after Jason's article came out in The Age saying who cares, my immediate reaction was this couldn't be better for the campaign because it just blows it up more. And you know, in this type of situation, we just want to be taking every opportunity that we can to tell Jason's story, to get the message out there. And when there's conflict, from you know, from ex-members of the AFL like Ackermanis, it just blows the story up more.
And in fact, it probably gave you an extra 24, 48 hours of material in the newspapers.
Absolutely right. And I think really actually highlighted exactly why Jason was doing is important, because those attitudes still exist.
Jason, what was your feeling when that came out and you started to, I imagine, the phone started ringing and you thought, hang on a minute, what's going on here at first? And then, you know, you had to respond to that. What was your feeling then?
I got the tweet before I got any phone calls. I mean, because I think Clint Stanway, the Channel 9 reporter, had tagged me in it. So I saw the tweet when it came through from Acca. First thing I did was retweet it. So I knew, just like Nick, that this could only be a good thing, really, because it just shows that there is a problem. Ackermanis seems to always put his foot in his mouth, and it's just another opportunity to create a story and get the message out there. And that's ended up, you know, that was what it ended up being, which was, you know, which was really great.
In various interviews that I've seen done with you over the last 2 weeks, there have been a number, usually male reporters, that have said, look, really, this isn't an issue. What are you on about?
Yeah.
And you've had to redefine exactly what it is that you're after and why it is that you're after it. Were you a little bit surprised by their lack of understanding?
Not really. I think I can put myself in the shoes of someone who is straight, I think, because, you know, you can really take for granted how sort of heteronormative society is, I think, you know, unless you have gay stories and stuff out there to hear, you're going to just assume that, you know, there's no actual problem and stuff like that. And it's not hard for someone to live in the closet or something like that when, you know, unless you can hear a story from someone saying the opposite, you're going to think that.
Now, the AFL have last weekend played the No to Homophobia advertisements on the screen in Sydney and here in Melbourne. Did you receive any response regarding that? Has anyone spoken to you that maybe was at the game and saw it up on the screen?
Yeah, I had a number of emails from people who were there, and I got some tweets as it was happening, which was really exciting. I was unfortunately stuck in Melbourne at my own football presentation night on the Friday night. I would have loved to have flown up to Sydney, but as a Pies fan, I think I'm probably glad I didn't. But the support and people talking about the response to the ad, so far I haven't heard a single negative comment in that area. It's just been really great so far.
Nick, the media really did get behind Jason's campaign, and I think in just about every instance was very fair and, in fact, favourable. What were your thoughts?
I think absolutely, and I think it comes back to the authenticity of his story. Like, the media really saw that Jason was putting himself out there, and what he was doing was brave and vulnerable to a certain extent, and that he was speaking from a real place of legitimacy. I think that it wouldn't have been the same if it was someone who didn't have that personal experience. It wouldn't have been the same if it was someone who had seen the issue from the outside or who was from outside of the football game themselves. And so the fact that Jason had that personal experience and was coming as like a really passionate footy supporter, like, you know, listening to some of the interviews like on 3AW, talking to some of the, you know, real kind of footy mad presenters, like the fact that Jason could connect with them about footy first and foremost and then turn it into a conversation about, like, no to homophobia, I think that's what made it so powerful.
My guests, Jason Ball, the man behind the campaign to get AFL to tackle homophobia, and Nick Allardyce. He is from Change.org. He's founding director of Change.org, and this is one of their larger campaigns. Nick, you also did a great campaign with a priest in Queensland.
Father Paul Kelly.
Yeah, fairly recently. And we spoke to Father Kelly a number of times, you know, 6 months ago and then again when it came up again. He had an extraordinary response to his campaign. You must be pleased with how Change.org is going.
Absolutely. You know, we launched Change.org here in Australia just over a year ago now. And the whole philosophy has been about how do we give everyday people the power to change their communities, their country, the world. And the response to campaigns like Jason's, the response to campaigns like Father Paul Kelly's, and lots of other examples has really shown me that there's a hunger for people to take action in a way. You know, traditionally, I think activism and being engaged with issues has been mediated through, you know, kind of often through organisations and through...
Or screaming and ranting down the street and smashing windows.
Exactly right. Yeah. And so I think it's the response for me has just shown how hungry people are to take that into their own hands. And the beautiful thing is that success breeds success. The biggest barrier to people creating change in their communities is not like a technological one. It's not, you know, even skills. It's actually, one, the belief that change is possible, or two, the belief that I'm someone who can create it. And so when they see someone like Jason, or when they see someone like Father Paul Kelly kind of standing up there, getting enormous amounts of community support, and then actually getting outcomes, it actually creates this beautiful cycle where more people are inspired to do the same thing.
27,000 signatures on change.org is one thing, but who picks up the call to Andrew Demetriou and says, "Oi, take note, mister"?
Well, I think in this case it was Andrew Demetriou who picked up the phone and gave Jason a call. I think he couldn't even... It was hard for him to avoid, given the media coverage that was happening.
Maybe you'd like to talk us through that process, Jason.
Receiving a call from AD. yeah.
Sorry, go on.
It was a surreal experience. You know, I didn't really know what to expect from him, but he was just a really nice guy. You know, wanted to reiterate, of course, all of the work that the AFL have done leading up to this situation.
So clearly it was on the radar.
Absolutely. You know, he had said that he'd seen the story, he'd seen the campaign, he wanted to congratulate me for it, and thought that, you know, it was great that I was taking a stand, and he wanted to, you know, offer support and let me know what the AFL was planning to do. And sort of I had the opportunity to talk to him as well, talk to him about my experience. I remember he said, when I said, that I've been really surprised with the support, he said, well, you know, I'm not surprised because I know people who are gay. There's a lot of people in the AFL who do believe passionately about this issue, so I'm not surprised. And I had to say to him, well, you know what, like, I'm the only one who's sort of taken this journey, so I had no other people's stories to go by, so I didn't know what to expect. I had to fear the worst.
Look, I am absolutely certain it has been on Mr. Dimitriou's radar for quite some years. Why has he done absolutely nothing until now?
Well, they have done little bits. They've taken a lot of very small steps. You know, I didn't want to go into the campaign sort of accusing the AFL of being completely negligent.
Yeah. Let me do that.
I had to give credit where credit's due in order so that they would take me seriously, I think, as well. But I think, look, the difference in this instance is I think people were looking for a personal story, like what Nick said. I think that really cut through. It was something that the media could run with, and that became a headache, I guess.
You know that this is not going to save lives yet, playing two TV ads on the big screen that has cost the AFL absolutely nothing to do so. And in fact, if anything, they've got great leverage from your story. What commitment is the AFL going to make to you and to our community in countering homophobia within its code? Because ultimately, it is more than just playing ads. It's about education packages. It's about an ongoing program from the grassroots right up. And unless it is that, it won't be sustainable.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And the good thing is that all of those things seem to be on the table now. It's one step, obviously, getting the ads screened, and there is more to do. But I think it's important that the AFL aren't sort of seen as grandstanding or don't have some sort of knee-jerk reaction, but actually do take the time to figure out what initiatives are going to have the right impact. And the good thing is that they've invited me to be a part of that. And so I now have the opportunity, with the sort of profile that's being created through this campaign, to really hold the AFL to account to make sure we get the results that we need for the community.
The AFL is a cashed-up PR machine, and they are very good at PR spin and manipulating issues to their advantage. Do you feel that you've been in any way manipulated to their advantage with regards to the No to Homophobia campaign?
Not yet. I mean, I think the getting the ads shown in the preliminary final was a really great compromise. You know, I felt that I understood that things are pretty tough with the grand final. They don't use it for any sort of social issues, whether it's Indigenous or multicultural or women's. Like, I can understand that perspective. And at the short amount of time that there was for the AFL to do something with this, I was really proud of what they did.
Nick, he's a good politician.
He's going to go far, I think.
Jason, one of the aspects of your particular campaign on change.org was you were calling for people to provide their stories, and you must have seen some pretty heart-wrenching ones along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I've spent the last few nights replying to about 30 emails at a time, trying to get to all of them, because it is really powerful stuff that I've been reading, and some of it's heart-wrenching, some of it's heartwarming, but it's just been shows that really my story is only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to people who are involved in the game and who are gay at all sorts of different levels. You know, people, the saddest stories that I hear are from people who stopped playing at a certain age because they couldn't take the homophobia.
Nick, are those stories something that are published? Are they public? And could they be published? Because I think that they would be something that the greater community could learn from.
I totally agree. And, you know, part of the conversation that Jason and I were having in setting that up and asking for that is to really, I guess, illustrate how there was this depth of an issue and to show the many different facets of what people are experiencing. And I think, you know, a lot of the stories that have been communicated, you know, people have been comfortable sharing them anonymously, obviously, and some of them have already made it into a piece in The Age that kind of tried to highlight the issue a bit more. And I think that as Jason goes into the conversations over the coming weeks about what the AFL is going to do next, I think those stories will play a really significant part in, I guess, illustrating the different areas where action's going to be needed. And I think, you know, the movement that's behind Jason, whether it be the stories that people have provided, I think has already, I guess, provided a real depth of support in a lot of ways that aren't public, like people within clubs, people within the AFL kind of making connections, making introductions, you know, providing different ways of supporting the campaign. And I think that will continue. And, you know, I think Jason and I have already talked about, you know, before going into the conversations with the AFL themselves, like asking people who've signed the petition, like what activities they'd like to see happening and what ideas they have for how, you know, this could be turned into real action in an ongoing way. And I think that's going to be some of the most exciting stuff that we see.
What's next for Jason Ball?
Oh, I don't know. Get back to my day job, I think, just for a little bit. My boss has been pretty angry how many bloody media calls I've had to take over the past couple of weeks.
Right.
He's been very understanding, actually. He might be listening. No, but look, it's finals at the moment, so I'm going to enjoy the weekend as much as I can. And, you know, I am really keen to knuckle down and see what more the AFL can deliver in this area over the coming months.
Who's going to win the grand final?
I think Hawks are the team to beat.
Nick,
I reckon.
Got a thought?
Yeah, I reckon Hawks are pretty hard to beat. I didn't have a very good one last weekend, but I reckon they'll turn it around.
Nick Allardyce, founding director of Change.org. Jason Ball, Aussie Rules footy star. You are my heroes. Congratulations on a campaign well fought. Congratulations on getting change where, frankly, to date, there's been very little action and you have started the ball rolling. Well done.
Thanks for having us, Dean.
Thank you so much for listening and thanks for all your messages. Catch me tonight on Hide and Seek when special guest Catherine Devney joins us. Luke Moon will be my co-host this evening whilst the apprentice is away. That's from 9 p.m. I'm Dean Beck. You can catch me on Twitter at Dean Beck on Air. Till next time, keep well, take care. Bye-bye.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.